and welcome to the Provider Podcast by NHS Providers. My name's Adam Brimelow, and in this special Winter Watch episode, we're reflecting on the pressures the NHS is up against in what's always the toughest time of the year, now with the added impact of Omicron. We'll look at the latest monthly performance figures and weekly winter sit rep data to examine how the NHS is coping. What are the biggest worries for trusts, staff and patients, and what, if anything, can be done to help get through it? I'll be joined by NHS Providers Deputy Chief Executive Saffron Cordery to explore these big questions, while our Senior Research Analyst Dr. Luis Costa da Silva will steer us through the latest data. And of course, there's Omicron, how that's playing out in different ways in different places. Just how hopeful can we be that we've turned a corner? NHS Providers Chief Executive Chris Hobson will explain the shifting patterns of pressures. He'll also offer some thoughts on the challenges trusts face on mandatory vaccination, as the February the 3rd deadline for the first vaccination looms ever larger on the horizon. You can join in the conversation by following us on Twitter and LinkedIn at NHS Providers with the hashtag The Provider Podcast, and keep up to date on future episodes by subscribing to the podcast. So let's start with Chris Hobson, whose detailed and authoritative Twitter updates on the evolving COVID threat really became a mainstay of national debate through the festive period, ensuring he was never really very far from the next TV or radio commitment. Chris, one of the features of COVID-19 is the ways it's affected different regions and communities at different times. How do you see that pattern evolving? You've called it the spotty mosaic. What do you mean?
Well, I think one of the things that was very, very striking talking to trust chief executives is the degree to which the impact here has been very, very localized. It's clearly been localized on the basis of what do the local infection rates look like, and you get that triple whammy of the combination of rising COVID-19 hospitalizations, rising staff absences. But the third bit of the triple whammy, which people haven't really talked about, is the fact that also it makes discharge much more difficult, because what you get is outbreaks in care homes, you get impact on domiciliary care through staff absences, and you also get an inability to discharge because of the pressure through staff absences on NHS rehabilitation, physiotherapy, etc. So what's very striking, because that's one element really, is on the sense the demand side, but then also it's very clear to us that, you know, trusts have got very different levels of resilience, partly, for example, if they already went into COVID with significant workforce shortages, if they're trying to run a stretching set of services across a number of different sites, which are rurally based in a different, you know, have got large geographic distance between them. So what we've definitely seen is that it's very, very different in terms of the impact. And the bit I particularly wanted to flag over the festive period was the fact that although things looked like they were improving in London, the reality was when we were talking to trust chief executives, particularly in the Northwest and the Northeast and Yorkshire, it was very clear they were experiencing significantly greater levels of pressure. I think the observation to make, and this is one of the really interesting questions, is how quickly the levels of hospitalizations are going to come down. There is definitely a view that we're going to see something of a plateau effect, where effectively we may well see, and this is what we saw in South Africa after Omicron, is effectively that although the infection rates come down very quickly, actually the hospitalizations haven't. And I think what particularly worries me is the degree to which we may see significant numbers of people still in hospital, for example, in the northern half of the country, which is going to have a really significant impact on their ability to restart care backlog recovery. So we will, I think, continue to see a very, very localized impact. Just one more point, Adam, is that the other bit is, for reasons I completely understand, we do spend an awful lot of time focusing on hospitals and ambulances, partly because that's where the data is. But I just want to make the point that it's very striking, again, talking to mental health and community chief executives about how incredibly busy they are too. And because we don't measure their planned care, because we don't measure their emergency care in the same way, I don't think we've been focusing enough on how difficult it is in their sector.
So clearly a really challenging situation still, but I suppose some relief at least that Omicron isn't proving as severe as previous variants.
Well, it's a really interesting debate, Adam, because, I mean, literally in the last week, I've been talking to people who are saying that actually the real impact here is from the vaccines. And there is a growing view amongst some people that actually, if you look at the disease that's caused in unvaccinated people, actually Omicron isn't that different from Delta in terms of the impact that it can have on unvaccinated people. The real advantage we've obviously kind of got is the fact that particularly the more vulnerable section of the population, in terms of the people who are over 50 and over 60, we've got very, very high rates of triple vaccination. But I'm really quite struck by how many people have said to me that if you look at some of the unvaccinated cases they've got, particularly over 60s, actually there may not be that much difference in terms of some of the kind of impact. And of course, that's got some interesting consequences. So as you know, we've been having this debate, for example, about 7 days to 5 days. We've been having this debate about mandatory vaccination of staff. And just to make the point that one of the reasons, the sort of reasons that's been hovering in the background and some of those debates has been, oh, well, actually, you know, Omicron isn't quite so severe. But actually, if it turns out that unvaccinated patients and also those who've got very, very low levels of immunity, I was talking to a cancer specialist chief exec the other day. He was just basically saying, we're really, really nervous about the impact that Omicron can have on people who've got very low levels of immunity. It just means we need to be triply, quadruply careful about those issues in terms of ensuring that we meet our duty to protect patients. So, yeah, I mean, the vaccines have worked brilliantly, but we just need to be careful about making this assumption that necessarily, particularly, as I said, for unvaccinated patients, that Omicron may not be that different from Delta, is what some people have been saying to me over the last week.
Okay, thanks, Chris. And there's really an understandable craving, isn't there? I think everyone will share this, to see the end of this pandemic and a temptation to seize on good news, encouraging developments wherever we see them. And we are seeing more of those things now. And I think people will understandably move to a sense that we're in the home straight, that this war against COVID is being won. How do you see that? Are we in the home straight?
Well, first of all, we're absolutely not still in the home straight in relation to Omicron, which is that things appear to have stabilised in London, but we still don't know whether there might be a second peak. The mobility data in terms of people moving around has clearly shot up. It shot right down over Christmas and New Year. I think people got the message about being cautious, but it shot right back up again. So people are still nervous about the idea of a second phase. Clearly, outside London, hospitals, community mental health and ambulance trusts are all still dealing with the Omicron wave. If you then look forward, I think it's really clear, and I was interested that the old vaccines minister, now the education secretary, Nadine Zahawi, was saying the other day, you know, this is with us for at least 5 or 6 years. I mean, there's a hope, isn't there, clearly, that if there are future variants, that they will be progressively less severe. But there's no guarantee of that. Epidemiologists say to me, yes, that may well happen, but equally, it may not happen. So I do think the bit I think I'm quite keen that we should get onto next, Adam, if I'm honest, is really thinking about what would we need to do to configure our health service, our public health service, local government, etc., in order to live with COVID over the next 5-6 years and potentially longer. And I think there's a whole bunch of issues that we need to think about if we need regular mass vaccination, if we need to have standing surge capacity, if we need to be able to, for example, you know, maintain some form of infection control because there'll be a steady stream of COVID patients coming into hospital. These are all really big issues that we need to think through properly. So I think there is a very, very big task here. And I think, you know, we will never return, in my view, we certainly won't return for some time to where we were before we encountered COVID for the first time.
Chris Hobson there. So now on to the wider winter picture. How severe are the pressures and how's the NHS coping? I'm joined now by Dr. Luis Costa da Silva, NHS Providers Senior Research Analyst. We have the monthly performance figures and weekly sit reps. Luis, it looks like pressures in emergency care are really making their mark.
That's right, Adam. They really are. We can see on the latest figures, there's some pressure on the ambulance services. So we have our December data showing the highest number of, on record, of the most serious ambulance incidents, the called category one. We also have emergency admissions in September up from the month before and higher than 1 year ago. And equally, our latest data from the winter sit reps that corresponds to a period from the 3rd to the 9th of January show that the ambulance handover delays are considerably higher than the same time last year. All these figures show the pressure on the system, really, and it's also a really good indicator of how patients are not flowing into the hospital, and that gives us a really good metric and an overall picture on the whole of the NHS.
Yeah, and I suppose another really worrying one in terms of, you know, patient safety is the long delays people are facing when there's been a decision to admit them into hospital.
Yes, definitely. So we have December data for those, and we're seeing that the number of patients waiting for more than 12 hours since the decision to admit has increased by a fifth on the previous month. And these are people that have already been waiting sometimes before. And then once the decision to admit is made, they can face significant delays. And this is not only higher from the previous month, but it's also the highest number on record. And it has tripled in a year, and it's now over five times greater than it was before the pandemic 2 years ago.
And Luis, we know these are system-wide pressures, aren't they? So one of the factors here is delayed discharges. What are the latest figures telling us on that?
Yes, we have that data as well, and we're seeing a large proportion of patients who no longer meet the criteria to reside in hospital are remaining in hospital. This is indicative of issues of patient flow, and it definitely reflects system-wide pressures, not just on acute settings. And for example, places where patients are usually discharged to, such as social care or community care, may not have the capacity at the moment to receive these patients. So this is also a really good metric to reflect the system-wide pressures we're seeing.
Yeah, so all in all, a really challenging situation. But evidence too in those figures of extraordinary work by the NHS, by frontline staff. We know the elective backlog for planned procedures has been growing, but we can also see the amount of activity, certainly up until the end of November in these figures, was impressive.
Yes, absolutely. We have our performance and activity data that predates the Omicron wave, but it's showing increases in, for example, the number of admitted inpatient pathways, non-admitted pathways as well, and also new referral to treatment pathways from the month before. This obviously reflects how hard the NHS staff are working at the moment. We also have data for the number of people on the waiting list. And at the end of November, those who had been waiting for longer than 52 weeks has fallen as well from the previous month. So this really reflects how the activity is ongoing at the moment.
Yeah, and it was important, wasn't it, also to see the figures for diagnostics for those tests and for cancer referrals up as well.
Yeah, absolutely. And even though the performance against the cancer waiting time standards fell slightly across all pathways, the activity has increased from the previous month. And we have seen also in November a record number of patients that were seen by a consultant following an urgent two-week GP referral. So that's really encouraging. And for diagnostic activity, we're also seeing that even though the waiting list has increased, we continue to see increases on diagnostic activity, and it's now on similar levels that we have seen before the pandemic. This essentially shows that the demand continues to outstrip the activity, but it also shows our staff are working really hard to deliver care under very challenging conditions.
So we had another data set, didn't we, which was the staff absences. And we know that's a real worry at the moment for trust leaders. What's the latest data telling us on that?
Yes, that's right, Adam. We have that data set as well. And it's showing on the latest data an average of about 88,000 staff absences. And of those, over half were due to COVID-19 or COVID-19 related. We have also seen this number increasing week by week. And the total absences, for example, increased by 10% since the week before. And the COVID absences are higher, much higher actually than the week of Christmas, for example. This really gives us a good picture of the conditions on the ground and the impact that Omicron is having on services at the moment. We know that this data is really important to contextualize the performance figures that we're going to get on the next release of Activity Tracker and the next publications. And it shows how the trusts are struggling with the staff absences on the ground on a day-to-day basis, on top of the increased demand and also the vaccination program happening at the moment.
Luis Costa da Silva. So let's talk now to NHS providers, Deputy Chief Executive Saffron Cordery. Saffron, many people were predicting the toughest winter in the history of the NHS. Is that now what we're seeing?
It's certainly, in terms of the data we've seen today and on an ongoing basis, it's incredibly tough out there on the front line. And I think that what I'm struck by is the fact that whilst we talk about the challenges out there in terms of the data, that's focused very much on hospital services and acute services. What we do know is that other bits of the NHS are also under significant pressure. So in mental health services, we've got long waiting times. The bar for accessing services is going up. Eating disorders, services for children and young people suffering particularly in light of COVID, but that comes from a place of pre-COVID where there was a significant care deficit. We know that ambulance services are really facing big pressures in terms of staffing shortages, in terms of long handover times, and also in terms of increased waiting times, even for their highest priority patients. And for community services, there's been an ongoing pressure, really. One is in terms of dealing with the additional demand that COVID brings in terms of supporting discharge into the community, but also the need to refocus and redeploy their services on COVID when they have a whole set of other priorities at play that they need to meet, including services for children and young people. So we've got the whole gamut of NHS services really under pressure.
So when you look at those figures, what would you pick out as being the biggest concerns at the moment?
I think that the biggest concern for me is the pressure on social care. So the NHS isn't an island. It doesn't exist alone. And the services that need to go on around the NHS to support its functioning and vice versa are under significant and sustained pressure. So social care is top of the list. And then following on from that, the impact of social care problems on discharging medically fit patients from hospital into the community, into care homes, getting people into their own homes to be looked after in an appropriate setting is incredibly difficult at the moment. And we know that those levels are going through the roof and it's causing significant problems. Now, this isn't the fault of social care. This is the fault of a lack of investment and the fault of ongoing challenges that predate COVID.
So, as you say, an incredibly difficult situation. Is there anything the government or national leaders can do now to make a difference for the rest of winter?
I think what we've got to see is some really clear, significant steps forward in terms of supporting social care, both in the short and medium term. So as much as can be done to help with staffing in social care, ditto in healthcare, actually. And I think that one of the things we do need to see is a properly costed, funded workforce plan for the NHS, because that would certainly improve morale if people knew that there was going to be the supply of a future workforce, which would help to take the pressure off of the current workforce. Because I think the prospect of the moment of working across the NHS or across social care under such pressure without adequate staffing levels is incredibly difficult, and people need to see a ray of hope.
That's it for this time. And a reminder, you can join in the conversation by following us on Twitter and LinkedIn at NHS Providers with the hashtag The Provider Podcast, and keep up to date on future episodes by subscribing to the podcast. Thank you.